I'm very pleased, as I always am, to welcome Professor Martin Drum to you from the Roundhouse. Welcome, Martin.
It's fantastic to be here, Michael. What a week.
What a week. We'll, on another occasion, reflect on the verdict, one might call it, in the Ben Robert Smith case. We're still taking that in. We're not here, though, today to note the fall of a hero, but to celebrate the resign of a local hero, Mark McGowan. Martin, were you taken by surprise as much as I was, and I think most of Western Australia, when it was announced during the week that the Premier was resigning?
Oh, it certainly came as a shock. I mean, I didn't think it was out of the question he could resign midterm, because it's such a demanding job. And, you know, the main mission and focus of everything that he did for so long was to fight COVID and bring WA through that period. So it's almost as if he's achieved everything he could in state politics, having won two resounding electoral victories. And with COVID receding and moving back to business as usual in politics, maybe there's a sort of sense that this is as good as it ever will get, and the only way is down.
We could subtitle today's edition of View from the Roundhouse, Anatomy of a Political Career. But just reflecting on it, as I think it's appropriate to do, because it's been an astonishing premiership, what has been the rise, the journey, if you like, of Mark McGowan to the top state political job?
Well, he'll tell you that story. I think he's told it at length about how he drove across the Nullarbor from New South Wales in, I think, a Holden Gemini.
Toyota Corolla.
Not much else. Oh, was it Corolla? Yeah, there you go. You know the story better than me. Went into the Navy, was a naval law officer, naval lawyer, stood and served in the city of Rockingham, and then became the member for Rockingham in 1996. That's a long time ago. And not many of the current crop of politicians are staying in politics that long. It's a much shorter term business. So he's been in state parliament for about 26 and a half years, second longest serving after Michelle Roberts. And then beyond that, he's been leader of the Labor Party for 11 and a half years as well, because he spent 5 years in opposition. So that's a decent stint. So his premiership is just the 6 years, but the overall level of service is a really long period of time. He famously stood for the Labor leadership after the Labor lost badly in 2008. And I think he got a very, very much a handful of votes at the max. And there were lots of quips that he could fit his supporters in the phone booth. So I think he could fit his supporters in. He couldn't fit his supporters probably in a sports stadium later on. So it does show how you can fight your way back from the brink, can't you, in politics?
Well, he held ministerial office for a period. Martin, did he show the promise there that he later showed and carried to fruition as premier?
Well, he served under both Gallup and Carpenter, and you know, he was regarded as one of the stronger performers, which is why post them losing government, he was the other contender, and it was, Ben White was the third one in the mix. And you know, Ben White had an unsuccessful challenge, and eventually it was Mark McGowan who came through and knocked off Eric Ripper to take the opposition leader's mantle. But you know, he did. So he did have a successful career as a minister beforehand. The other interesting anecdote, Michael, is that even when he'd been opposition leader for 4 years, there were still doubts in the Labor Party about his ability to win. So there was an attempted coup to launch Stephen Smith into the leadership. That was only a year out from the 2017 election, but he won in a landslide. So he's had his doubters along the way, and he's obviously silenced them. So it has been a fascinating political career for Mark McGowan.
If you had to try and identify the challenges, the actual challenge, I suppose, from Stephen Smith, but more broadly speaking, the challenges that Mark McGowan had to to deal with on the ascendancy to the premiership. How would you think about listing them?
Look, I think that there's a range of things. Firstly, it was unaligned in factional terms, and that makes it much harder because you don't have a natural support base in the party. It was close to about four or five other unaligned MPs. Your Ben Wyatt, Rita Safayoti, Paul Papalia, John Quigley, a number of other MPs in a similar situation. But that's not the same as having a full faction at your back. And he had to contend with contenders from both the right and left at different times. And that made his ascension all the more likely as well. And then obviously the challenges that he faced as a premier were really significant, Michael. Obviously COVID was the biggest one. And every political leader reacted quite differently. But there was initially some flak, particularly from the opposition, initially when he closed the borders and didn't announce a date for opening them up again. So it wasn't always supported by both sides of politics. They changed their tune when they realised how unpopular their stance were in opposition, the Liberal opposition at the time. But that was a big step. It did impact on families that were hoping to reunite and people coming to visit sick relatives, etc. But of course, it had overwhelming support amongst the broader population, which made a big difference. But like other leaders of COVID, Michael, it's not just restricted to Mark McGowan. They would have had constant briefings from 5 in the morning to 10 o'clock at night on how things were unfolding, and they had to make a lot of decisions in a hurry. So it was a pretty difficult time to be a leader.
We often talk about along comes a certain time and someone has to rise to that challenge. Mark McGowan seems to have done that. If it hadn't been for COVID, do you think we would have seen the full Mark McGowan that hit 91%, was it, approval rating, and won a landslide victory for the Labor Party at the last election?
No, there's no way he would have reached 91%. And in fact, it's completely abnormal for political leadership in Australia because broadly, somewhere between 40 to 50% sit on one side of politics and 40, 50% sit on the other side. So you never get even much higher than 50% approval rating, I think, normally. So this was extremely unusual times. It's worth mentioning that what was then regarded as a big landslide in 2017. Labor got 44% of the primary, which is its highest primary ever in Western Australia. So that was a big enough win. So he had some wind behind his sails anyway, and he had a number of signature projects that he was working on. So we can't attribute it entirely to COVID, but obviously, during COVID, his popularity went to a whole new level.
And when you look back at his, particularly the period he was premier, what are his major successes, do you think? What will go down in the record books?
About that, but obviously, his biggest signature policies would be Metronet, a massive expansion of the rail system in Perth. Now, that's got a long way to go, and his critics have castigated him for the length of time that's taken. But it is making progress, and it is ambitious, and there's a lot of resources being allocated towards it. So his successors will have to finish that work, I'd imagine. But that was a big picture project. Obviously, there was a pivot late in his term to renewable energy and a net zero target. Which itself is a significant development in a state that's always been pro-development and always been supportive of traditional forms of energy. Again, that's another one for which there's been a commitment, and then there's a lot of work to go to follow through on that. So that's early days. Look, a lot more resources were poured into the public health system than ever before. Now, I'm sure plenty of people will say there's still lots of problems in the health system, and I think they'd be right. But Again, that's probably something to say to answer over a longer period of time how that's gone, because one of the things about investments is it takes a number amount of time for that to come off. Yeah, so there's been a number of things. A lot of them are going to, your legacy is fascinating. Everyone talks about your legacy straight after you go, but 5 or 10 years down the track is the best way, I reckon, to understand someone's legacy. Then you've got a fuller picture, don't you, about everything that they've achieved or haven't achieved, perhaps.
We used to say when Colin Barnett was premier that he was in his style something of an emperor. It seemed you needed to get the emperor to decide that something was worth doing, or he would deign something should be done, probably without always taking it to cabinet, one suspects. And that perhaps is a trait of successful leaders everywhere. They have the confidence to call it as they see it. What about Mark McGowan? How would you describe his leadership style?
Oh, well, it was if you're calling Colin Barnett the emperor, what do you call Mark McGowan? What, the dictator? I'm not sure, because he definitely centralized power a lot more than Barnett ever did, certainly. And that was born out of COVID, so that style changed from 2020 onwards. But because of his dominance and his political popularity, everything continued to go through Mark McGowan in his office. So that's been a very centralized approach. And you didn't see much dissent at all from the party. You saw even very little ability of stakeholders outside government to really offer alternative visions, because his view was so dominant. So he certainly had a really centralized administration, and that's born out of the command and control during the pandemic.
Martin, we love in life because it makes the conversation simpler, if not more erudite, to say someone's on the left or on the right or centre of left or centre right or whatever. Where does Mark McGowan fit in this? And did he slide along that scale during his journey, do you think?
Oh, well, look, I think he was a fairly centrist Labor premier, if I could use that term. Certainly, there were a number of social reforms undertaken. I'm sure I point them out, such as legalisation of euthanasia. However, I would say, on the most part, I mean, if you look in the broader picture, the part of his popularity was steering a course that had the broadest popular support that. Across the community. He was very supportive of the mineral resources sector, and determined to keep that going. And I think that he has a lot of friends in business, and he could probably walk into some of those board roles quite easily. So no one could make a case, in my view, that he's part of a radical left when it comes to politics. Like I said, there was that pivot to renewable energy, but that's been a more recent step. And it'll be interesting to see how that's implemented. Certainly, there was various money poured into public services, and especially of late, with an improved budget position that was more popular. He was very into wage restraint in the public sector, very much into that. That was born out of a poor set of finances that he inherited, so he wanted to really rein that in. That all points to him being a fairly centrist premier, in many respects.
Martin, somebody invented the expression a hard act to follow, not by accident. If you've ever been on a podium and you're the next speaker up and someone's come out and they've had the audience laughing and clapping and standing up for them, and then it's your turn to come on, it's not exactly ideal. I think, do you agree that Mark McGowan's going to be a hard act to follow? And the Premier designate, I'm not sure he's been sworn in yet, Roger Cook, will probably be contemplating that over his Wheaties this morning.
Oh, I think well, Roger Cook's got huge shoes to fill, and he can't possibly fill them in the same way. And everyone across the community will have to have different expectations, starting with his own party. I don't think they can possibly expect him to be nearly as popular as Mark McGowan was, or to produce an election result anything akin to Mark McGowan's one in 2021. So people have to realise that from the start, that what we had saw there was completely extraordinary circumstances. If people understand that, then probably he's got a fair chance. If people are trying to measure him up by the yardstick of his predecessor, he's probably always going to struggle. But he's definitely got a massive parliamentary majority in both houses, which should make it a bit easier for him. So he's fairly well placed there. And I think business and other areas, they see that the Labor government's not about to lose power. So I think they'll be very keen to work with him. And so he should have a number of prevailing wins. And he's also got a pretty good budget position to work with as well. So that's all working in his favour.
Martin, you mentioned early on about the factions in the Labor Party. There are factions, no doubt, in all parties, some more historic and some more clearly defined than others. With Mark McGowan leaving politics now, do you get in this post-COVID period some reset so that the exercise, the practice of politics, say in the cabinet, will be more like it used to be in the olden days, whatever that was? Would you expect a greater influence from those Labor Party factions? Perhaps you should tell our listeners broadly what they are.
Yeah, happy to. So Labor Party's always had formal factions. These are groups in the Labor Party that members join to advance their interests. And they're notionally, sometimes they're seen as left and right, and they're often called that. But I think they're as much about personal relationships as anything else and who you choose to throw your lot in. In the Labor Party, what's known as the broad left, the overall left faction has the numbers and the vast majority of MPs, but it's split between two main groups, and it's United Workers Union, sometimes known as the MISOs, and the Metal Workers, AMWU. The MISOs are the bigger group, but they split for between Amber Jade Sanderson and Roger Cook. So we'll see how that works around how well people in that faction work together. And the Metal Workers decided to go in their own direction. They didn't follow the majority of the MISOs. They backed Roger Cook, who won a minority of votes there. So that was a split in the broader left faction between those two factions. Hope I'm not going into too many weeds here, but it may have recriminations. It may have repercussions for the pre-selection process for the next election. Well, I guess we'll see. On the other side, what's called Progressive Labor, but it's actually the right faction in the Labor Party, they didn't really have a dog in the race, so they were happy to back Roger. And the other ones, of course, there's unaligned MPs who don't actually sit in the faction, that small group that I talked about, and Rita Safiotti is one of those, and she's become Deputy Premier. So there's a number of broad groups. Pre-selection will be the main focus for the factions, but there could be some other discussions, particularly around which new ministers might come into cabinet, given Mark McGowan's resignation, vacancy in the Treasury, which is likely to be filled by Rita Safiotti, and then perhaps a small reshuffle with a new Premier coming in.
Are you making any other predictions, Professor Drummond?
I won't make specific predictions about portfolios, but it's possible that some of the older guard, some of those MPs that have been in cabinet for a long time, some of them may either choose to walk or get their marching orders in order to get a few new MPs in the cabinet.
So some sort of old saying too, isn't there, about keeping your friends close, but your enemies even closer. Will we see Amber Jade Sanderson promoted to an even more important role? Will she take over Rita Safiotti's portfolios in planning and ports and transport, do you think?
That's a really good question. There's not too many portfolios more important than health, so she's already a very senior minister. It may be that Roger leaves her in health because that will keep her hands full, that's for sure. Rita has already said that she's interested in the Treasury role and she wouldn't mind keeping the transport role as well. So that'll keep her busy. But it might mean that that broader portfolio is a bit less appealing for someone like Amber Jade. So I guess we'll see. It's going to be interesting musical chairs.
We'll have plenty of opportunities in the weeks coming to talk about it, Martin. But in the meantime, what does a relatively youthful, bouncing on the balls of his feet, ex-premier do? Some of them go off to foundations like Mindaroo, or ex-politicians go off and sometimes start up vineyards, get themselves involved, as you said, on the boards of big companies. What would be your advice to nearly late premier, ex-premier Mark McGowan?
Well, certainly money is no object because Mark McGowan is one of two MPs on the old parliamentary pension scheme. So he's entitled to a truckload of money after his retirement because that scheme was very generous. I think it's somewhere in the vicinity of around 270 grand a year, I read somewhere. I mean, that's pretty good coin for the rest of your life. But he's only 55, so he's got a fair bit of his working life ahead of him. I'm sure the lure of sitting on some boards akin to his former treasurer, Ben Wyatt, would be really appealing because it's probably half or a quarter of the stress and two or three times the wage that you can get from lining up with big business. And he's very popular in those circles. So the attraction, the lure, will be incredible. He's got the other option, like Colin Barnett, and go out to his farm in 2J and enjoy a different lifestyle and just relax a bit. But Colin Barnett was a bit of a different age to Mark McGowan when he left politics. And then there's the other option that Jeff Gallop had, who also resigned voluntarily from the premiership. He went into academia, Michael, as a political scientist of all things. So that's a very good choice in my view.
Although they don't pay the same rate.
No.
But a very satisfying career, Martin, and making very useful contributions to the betterment of society. Well, we're going to find out the answers to those questions as the days go ahead. It has been a momentous period, but might I say, it's not an easy life in politics. I take my hat off to someone like Mark McGowan, who's done all the hard yards, been there for a long time. Most days and nights of the week, you have some official function. Your telephone always has to be answered, or mostly when it rings. And then during the COVID period, his life certainly wasn't his own. So I think it's appropriate, is it not, to pay tribute to the man?
Certainly. And I think that, we're probably never going to see in our lifetime another premier that's nearly as popular and as broadly admired in the WA community. Could be wrong. But I think the vast majority, his popularity levels and the results of the last election seem to indicate that a huge number of people, many of whom always Liberal voters, never voted Labor in their life, still really admired the guy and thought that he'd made a great contribution. So it's very rare that you get to go out of politics at a timing of your own choosing.
Martin, it's been a good discussion as always. See you next week.
See you next week.